Drive Time on RTE Radio 1. Sponsored by Zurich. For pensions, protection, savings and investments. At Zurich, we deal in peace of mind.
Now, as we have been discussing for the past number of weeks, under a proposal due before the Department of Housing, planning exemptions are being considered for freestanding modular or cabin-style homes. While some have welcomed the solution to the lack of housing, architect Hugh Wallace says he does not believe that relaxing the rules on back garden structures is a viable solution to the housing crisis. Director of Housing Policy at Progress Ireland, Sean O'Neill McPartlin, and architect TV presenter Hugh Wallace both join me now. And good afternoon to you both, and thank you for joining us on the programme. And Hugh Wallace, I might come to yourself first. Why do you think this isn't a viable proposal?
Well, because I think that we have to understand putting a temporary structure into a back garden, like what A rating does it have? Does it mean that it's a G-rated home? How do you connect it to the sewerage? How do you get water? Like, there's a whole issue in Dublin, there isn't actually enough water. So if 1,000 people in an area all decide to put pods in their back garden, there's no water. So I don't think the process has been thought through correctly. And if you like, it's a knee-jerk reaction to a housing crisis that needs to be addressed much more substantially than we are doing at the moment. Mm. So this is like, I know, brilliant idea. We'll put temporary pods in the back of people's gardens.
Okay. So, I mean, some people have been looking for this or trying to do this for quite some time. Your concern from what you're saying there, one of your concerns is that if this was done at scale, we could start immediately running into big problems.
Well, we're going to run into problems. How are these pods connected to the sewage system? If they are, then there's a whole world of bylaws, building regulations. So how do you put in the pipe? Do you just come along and put a pipe in? Like, who stamps that the pipe is correct? So I think that it's different if you're saying you can put a pod in the back garden, but it actually has no sewage and has no water. But I think that defeats the purpose of these units, which are for alternative living within people's houses. And we also have an issue of right of light and right of privacy. So these pods more than likely end up at the back of the garden, facing in towards the house. But now all of a sudden, they're also facing up into the first floor of the neighbours at very marginal distances. And also the people actually living in the bedrooms upstairs are now looking straight in to the living areas of you know, homeowners. And I believe if all of a sudden it's connected to drainage and water, it isn't temporary. All of a sudden, it's permanent. So if it's a permanent building, then do permanent regulations apply? Mm. So I think there's a whole area of ambiguity. And yet again, the government are just doing out a knee-jerk reaction. Everybody goes whoopee. But in fact, the regulations about the pod in the back garden will mean they won't happen.
Okay, some interesting issues raised there. Sean O'Neill McPartlin, as I said, also joins us, Director of Housing and Progress Ireland. And Sean O'Neill, perhaps on the first question about sewage and connection to the water system, I don't know, do you have any light you can shed on that issue?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you very much for having me on. And thanks for that, Hugh. So I think the first thing to note here is that in many cases, there won't be any additional use of sewage or water. So a lot of the cases internationally where these things are used, and the main kind of case for this that Minister Cummings laid out, was that people would be moving from the primary dwelling into the secondary dwelling, if you like. So the kind of net addition to the uses of services like drainage, sewage, and water supply and so on would in many cases be equal, and that kind of is consistent with the international evidence.
But just to clarify what you're saying there, that you at the moment would have all these people living in one house, overcrowded as such, and that some of those people would now move into the back garden cabin. So
yes, exactly.
Okay. And so, there's evidence for that, you say, internationally?
Well, this is the kind of main case that you see it being used for in international cases. That's from New Zealand all the way to Canada. But I should also say that family homes around the country, what would traditionally be family homes, three bedrooms, semi-detached, are crammed full of young people, you know, in their 20s. That want to live in their kind of own accommodation. Ideally, they would get an apartment, but as we know, apartments are extraordinarily expensive. So I suppose this policy provides them a lifeline, and you don't really hear many objections. And Hugh is correct to say there's a huge strain on services, but you don't hear people complaining that the strain on services caused by overcrowding of what are essentially family homes with renters kind of crammed into them. Not many people complain that that will overload the services. I think this policy will provide, if you like, a lifeline to a lot of families to kind of give some independence to their loved ones, be it an older person who might want to right size, stay in their community, or perhaps a younger person who wants a little bit of independence.
And what about, Sean, if there's no planning required for this, making sure that any connection, for example, to the sewage system meets the regulations, if there's no oversight?
Yes, it's a very good point. And, you know, I believe Hugh used the phrase tenements. I hope you won't mind me bringing up in his article today. I think one point is very important to get across here is that what's being proposed is very high quality units. The building regulations on this are quite clear. Any new structures built after 2019 has to be A2 rated. And as the ESRI recently reported, 80% of the rental market has B or ratings of less than B, meaning these will stand out. These new units being proposed under this measure will stand out as unusually high quality. So far from being kind of temporary, these will be kind of long-lasting structures. Many of the people who provide these structures give guarantees up to 70 years. So I'm not concerned that they're going to be temporary. If the issue is about quality, then the question should be, how do we enforce the rules? The rules are there. We have to enforce them, but we shouldn't be thinking about taking away a lifeline to families.
All right, I might bring Hugh back in. And Hugh, what do you think of what Sean's
saying? Well, I think that if we're... Sorry, my understanding is these were temporary. They were pods coming in. But that would appear not to be the case. These are permanent structures and therefore will have to be rated, in my opinion, to an A rating. And in doing so, 40 square metres... that unit will cost 100 to 120,000 euro. So to me, that defeats the purpose of this. So all of a sudden, we're building permanent structures in the backs of people's gardens with issues of overlooking and also issues over rights of light, because an awful lot of our buildings throughout the country are narrow, long plots.
Mm.
And once you put the building in, you're taking light from the next door neighbour and so on.
And where are you getting that cost of 120,000? That's based on your own experience.
Yes,
if you want
yes.
to build 40 square metres.
Correct.
If
somebody came in and said, I'm building 40 square metres, I'd say, great, 120,000 plus costs.
For an A2 rate. Sean?
Yeah.
I think, pardon me, Hugh's not wrong to say that, you know, there are a lot of suppliers who do it for that price. I've visited many that you can get for a lot lower than that, but the point isn't...
Like what? I wonder.
Number.
Sorry, Sean.
I've seen them for about 70,000 at that size, and an A2 rating, mind you. But I think, you know, whether it's 70 or 100, I think the big thing is it costs over about 600,000 to deliver a two-bed apartment in Dublin right now. So the difference between 100,000 or 120, whatever the number might be, given the supplier, is huge. You know, the cost of delivering homes has skyrocketed over the last number of years. Any measure that allows us to deliver homes for kind of 6x less, I think we should be looking very closely at
Hugh,
and taking very seriously.
Sorry, what needs to happen here is we just need to understand we need to build houses in our towns and villages. There's lots of land which the government own. You know the way they're doing the section in relation to providing accommodation for refugees?
Yeah.
And you don't need planning. So those legislation, that planning should be used to deliver homes on the land that the country owns.
Actual houses, affordable houses, I suppose.
Houses.
I'm really taken aback, Sean, at that cost of 70,000. Because when we talked, well, Hugh says 120, you're saying you can do it for 70. When we were talking about this 3 or 4 weeks ago when this proposal came out, the figure 30,000 was what was being put out there.
Yeah, the issue with the 30,000 is it's non-compliant with regulations. In terms of heating and
A2 rating and all
well,
that.
Well, just the fact that you can live in it.
Okay.
If you're paying 30,000, it is a temporary structure. And it's more like moving in the mobile home. But you still need, in my opinion, to plug the mobile home into the sewage and water. And therefore, you will find under Section 2, Subsection B, you know those little mythical things, you have got to get approval of the drainage. And you find... in that, there's a whole process of who submits the drainage drawings? You know, the way in this country, it sounds very simple, but by the time everybody's fiddled with it and put in the complications,
it gets expensive.
It just doesn't happen. Let's go on and get on
lots
now.
Lots and lots and lots of people.
Let's get on and build houses.
Okay, are getting in touch.
And
I want to come back to that point in a second, but lots of people getting in touch. 51551. Pods are a get-out clause for the government pushing the issue of housing back on individuals. What about the renovation of all the vacant buildings in our towns and cities, bringing life back into the areas? That comes from Susan. Susan Hugh Wallace is punching the air here in the studio.
That's it, girl. Go for
it. Yeah, he agrees with that. Another person, though, says householders are already permitted to build a 40 square metre extension with a toilet, etc. This is just a minor change to that regulation to give families a little extra space. Another person, Hugh, says you don't want to have the back garden modular homes approved because there's no gravy train in them for architects.
Oh, not at all. That's not the case at all. That isn't, and if somebody thinks that, it's very interesting. Architects are involved in only 10% of one-off housing in this country. So be quite clear, it's not a gravy train for architects. The issue I have is the complication that will come in. So it's like the government one day got rid of co-living, if you remember
that.
Yeah, that was...
Well, it never really came in. Yeah.
No, but it should, because that would have had a dramatic effect on the housing crisis because of the type of accommodation that was providing, particularly with the fact that you now can have, you know, you're only in the office 3 days.
Version of that?
No, no.
Bedsits, you know, the things that were taken away, but it's more affordable. It's not exactly where anybody wants to end up for the rest of their lives, but it is a step change for people while they're trying to move on to the next step.
I accept that. But what I'm saying to you is the cost here is 120,000.
Right, okay.
It's not 30. So if somebody's telling me they can pop a pod in the back of the garden that's permanent for 30,000, they're on a hiding to nothing.
Okay, and I want to get clarity from you, Sean, on that, just absolute clarity. Under your understanding, if people comply with the building regulations, they might not have to go for planning, but they still have to comply with building regulations, this really can't be done for less than 70. Is that how you'd see it?
Look, I'm not entirely sure, and I don't think anyone is, including people in the government. There are companies who will supply these things, and obviously, if the rules come in to make them legal, if you like, to build, the more people that build them, the kind of more costs we can get down, especially if modular factories can be built to scale. But I think the point isn't to kind of hold our finger in the air and find out what the number is. It's the scale of difference between the cost of delivering an apartment and a house on the one hand, which I agree with you, we should be building more of these, but we shouldn't be thinking it's more houses, more apartments, or this. We need to do both.
But and is
I
there
like
an argument
Hugh's idea
here?
Yes.
Yeah, so on that point, that what Hugh was talking about, bringing in the current laws that we have, that homes or IPAS centres can be built without having to go through the planning process, that would use that same structure for affordable housing, social homes on state land to try and deliver those homes
Correct.
At greater scale. But is there an argument, Sean, that we should focus on that and not encourage people to spend 70 to 120,000 euro on cabins in a back garden so that when the affordable homes do come on the market, they actually have the money to buy them?
I think we shouldn't be thinking at all as if, you know, in this kind of zero-sum way, it's these kind of chaumery on the one hand or big apartments. But people need different kinds of housing throughout their life at different stages. You know, there are a lot of people living in their mother or father's house if they're lucky. And they don't want to, and they want to move on to something, but they might not be able to afford, even, you know, in the next good while. You know, there's a long way to go before prices come down.
If prices come down, stabilize, I think, is what we're aiming for at the moment.
Yes. So we need something that's kind of will serve people who maybe are transitioning out of the family home or need somewhere that's more age appropriate. I think we should leave it up to people to decide what kind of housing is appropriate for them at their stage of life. You know, we see this in other countries. There is no, and it does very well in other countries, but there's no kind of successful housing system that says, the government says, we're going to predict what people want and only allow that. Look, allow people to decide what they want.
What about, Sean, the issue of enforcement? Lots of people asking about that. And again, if we go back to the building regulations and all that, and also what these cabins are going to be used for. One person here on text says, who's going to be responsible for enforcement? These units are going to be rented out to people from outside the family home. We already have 4 in our immediate area, says that person. They're already illegal, but there's no enforcement. Another person's asking, who's going to enforce them to make sure they're not used as Airbnbs?
Yes, yeah, so I think the answer to troubles about enforcement, and I agree there are troubles with enforcement, as we've seen with Airbnbs. But the answer is not to remove a housing option from people. It's to get better at enforcement. So, you know, one idea, and it's just one idea among many, is to make sure that in order to achieve your exemption, because exemptions come with conditions, and one condition might be that you have to register this with the local authority. So the local authority knows what you intended to use it for, what kind of size it is, and any other kind of information that they want.
Yeah, I intend to use it for my adult children, yeah. And the next thing, you know, it's up in Airbnb and no one notices because there's thousands of them.
But that's an issue for the local authority to figure out how to enforce.
Not so sure. I think that this has sort of been pushed out there as a panacea. It's definitely worthy to be looked at and to be used. But I'm saying it's not a panacea to actually provide solutions, because there is a big cost associated with these. Mm. Who is signing off the building that it's compliant, that it doesn't fall down? I think that the idea is great, but it's much more important that we get on and build houses and homes.
Again, a lot of people are saying, you know, this is one solution
Correct. To
a complex problem.
Correct.
But you agree with that then?
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay, so actually, Sean and Hugh, you agree with each other?
We do.
Well, this is fantastic. That's great news.
We're at IDEM.
Okay, well, we took about 15 minutes of conversation. Yeah, we got there.
I should say that Hugh and I are now in agreement with the vast majority of people, according to an Irish independent poll of the weekend.
Yes, I saw that in around 85% of people saying that this is something that they agree with. But again, we'll see when the details come out, and lots of people getting in touch on 51551 with their thoughts on it. We'll get to some of those texts a little bit later on. Thank you both very much for joining us in the programme this evening. That's Hugh Wallace and Sean O'Neill, Mike Partland.